This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. So today we are here to talk about one of the most important topics that has been in the media for the past few days. Today with me is Dr. Muhammad Qutb. He's an international speaker and he has been speaking about this matter since so long time, and we wanted actually to dig deeper on the key messages and what are the development and progress of these events nowadays. Sheikh, how do you see the events from your side?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Wa afdalu salati wa atamu taslim ala Sayyidina wa imamina wa habibina Abil Qasim Muhammad ibn Abdullah wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa tabi'in wa man tabi'ahum bi ihsan ila yawmiddin. Thank you very much for that introduction. What we are witnessing today is an unprecedented development in the Palestinian issue. This is something that many analysts have been forced to confess, many of them Israeli analysts, that these developments are unprecedented and that this was a surprise to them like no other. And thus it has been frequently compared to the 1973 war. In Arabic we call it Harb October, they call it the Yom Kippur War, because it was a shock, it was a surprise to them.
Surprisingly, it was in the same time, almost, like 6th of
actually
October.
Actually, exactly, almost the exact same time.
6th October.
So October 6th.
Yeah.
This is October 7th. Was that on the minds of Hamas when they did it? Maybe, I don't know that for a fact. But that was a shock to them and they weren't prepared for it. But even then, they said this shock was even bigger. And the as we can see, the casualties and the results of it are even larger and more serious for Israel. Of course, I think the basics of Operation Al-Aqsa flood, Tufan Al-Aqsa. If you are following the situation, the developments are fairly clear. On the morning of October 7th, on Saturday, Hamas started this operation where they were able to infiltrate into what people call Israel proper. Of course, we consider all of it the land of Palestine that has been usurped by the Zionist criminal entity. But ultimately, they were able to infiltrate into what they call Israel proper from Gaza. They did so all at the same time from the north and from the south. And exactly.
Yeah.
The question was, how would they be able to do so when you have all of this advanced technology and surveillance?
Maybe before
radar.
Maybe before talking about the events itself, I want to know and understand how this whole conflict happened and why this is different this time.
Well, I mean, the resistance is ongoing, and it has to be ongoing because Israel is a military occupation, and in fact, one of the worst military occupations that the world has seen in the last few centuries, and one of the few that remain. So the resistance to this military occupation is something that is accepted and permitted by all. We're talking about from a religious standpoint, from a legal standpoint, even according to international law. This is a military occupier, and armed resistance to this military occupier is something that is sanctioned. So this is just another example of resistance to the military occupation and their unspeakable crimes, especially recently. And Ismail Haniyeh actually mentioned this in his speech, the reasons for this latest attack. He mentioned, among other things, the desecration of Al-Masjid Al-Aqsa, the continued desecration of Al-Masjid Al-Aqsa, which continues unabated under our noses, even though people forget, and maybe people think that it's not happening anymore, but it continues. They continue to bring in these religious extremists into Al-Masjid Al-Aqsa.
I also recall that this is the sole reason for all the uprisings that happened before 2006, even 2000, and the things that are happening, all the progressions that happened before, all the anger that we've seen for all the Islamic world started from these kind of practices.
Absolutely. The desecration of Al-Masjid Al-Aqsa is something that no Palestinian, no Arab, and definitely no Muslim can accept. they do these things as litmus tests in order to see what is the situation of the Palestinians and the Arabs and the Muslims at large.
Okay.
So they send and they allow these religious extremists to do what they're doing in Al-Masjid Al-Aqsa, to attack worshippers, to hassle the journalists. We saw how they were hackling this journalist of Al Jazeera as well. This is what they love to do. They do these things to see, are the Muslims still awake or are they sleeping? Why? Because they continue their demolitions under Al Masjid Al Aqsa with the purpose of building the purported Temple of Solomon. Right? So the demolitions continue and the desecration continues, and God forbid, they are just waiting to see that the Muslim Ummah is asleep so that they can finally demolish Al-Masjid Al-Aqsa and work on building their temple.
But do
of
you
course,
see...
The desecration is one thing that...
Yeah.
The other thing that is very important is the continued occupation, the crimes of these Israeli terrorists, the continued killing of men, women, and children, the continued
civilians
appropriation of land and expansion of what they call the settlements, better described as colonies, and of course, the very important point about the prisoners, the Palestinian prisoners.
This is the most important one.
Ben-Gvir, a cursed Ben-Gvir, mentioned that they are going to continue to clamp down on the freedoms of the Palestinian prisoners. So this is another very important point that was mentioned as a reason for the latest attack.
Yeah, I want to talk about what's significant about this move, thing that we have been witnessing since Saturday until today. So what's significant about this war? And you mentioned that this is a test for the Arab and the whole Muslim Ummah, if they are asleep or they're still awake. So how do you see this?
Well,
this
signal? Honestly, the testing is done by Israel. Israel is testing us. So this is why they send these quote-unquote settlers into Al-Masjid Al-Aqsa to do the crazy things that they do in order to see if Muslims are going to protest this or they're just going to be fine with it. As far as the timing of the event, I think the timing is rather interesting. Now, we might say that, the timing is, it just so happened that this was the right time to do this. We know that this has been in the works and being planned for years now. But I think it's interesting that this comes at a time where normalization of ties between Arabs and Israel is at a peak, isn't it? And we heard recently that there are negotiations going on between Saudi Arabia and Israel as well. And maybe they were ready to announce some kind of a deal or some kind of normalization of ties. I believe that the current events now will make further normalization much more difficult. Because what it does actually is it breathes new life into the issue. The Israelis want Arabs, Muslims, and Palestinians to forget about the issue. Everything is okay. these few Palestinian terrorists now, they're quiet, nothing is going on. Israel is treating them well, and they are opening Al-Aqsa to everyone, and there's freedom of worship. This is what they would like everyone to believe, right? Mm. So that more and more countries normalize ties with them. Mm. This can only happen if nothing is going on, or it seems like the resistance is dead, and the Palestinians seem to be complacent or somewhat, accepting the status quo. So when this happens, it breathes new life into the issue for the Palestinians, for the Arabs, and for the Muslims at large, that no, this is a stolen land. This is one of the most heinous military occupations. They continue to terrorize the Palestinians with impunity, and with the help of major superpowers, as we know. And as long as they do, and no one is talking about it, this is what will furnish the ground for further normalization. Now, I think this is going to put a stop to any further normalization of ties, especially as we see things unfold, and we see the kind of crimes that they are committing in retaliation, blanket bombing, mm-hmm. Gaza, just destroying civilian infrastructure and buildings and mass killing.
Yeah, there are some opinions. So let me give you the other opinions, because some people would say, okay, now we have provoked the beast, and now he's bombing Gaza 24 hours a day, many people. So hundreds of people now are killed, more are to come in a few days. Hamas and the resistance are very resistant. They will not do this. And they would say, okay, come on, few hostages, few hundred of hostages. We killed some people here and there, but you know who's going to win at the end. So how do you see this kind of reactions? And
you mean the reaction that, Hamas made a mistake? Why did they do this? What's a few hostages?
No, the people are being killed by the bombs every day.
Well, keep something in mind. This is quite unfortunate. The Jews, especially, should be the first people to know what it means to be oppressed and persecuted. Because as Muslims, we also acknowledge that they were persecuted for centuries. They should be the first people to know the price of persecution, and not therefore mete out such persecution to innocent Palestinians, who, by the way, were not their persecutors in the centuries of history. It was rather the Christians and the Christian nations that were persecuting the Jews, not the Muslims. So the reason I mentioned this is because you're saying, okay, what's a few, a little bit of destruction here and some hostages there. No, unfortunately, the only language Israel understands is the language of power. Hmm. That's the only language they understand. As soon as you lift up the white flag, for peace, they eat you alive, okay? If it was up to them, they would leave nothing of Palestine. What you have now is Palestinians living on 22% of the land, not even a continuous or contiguous 22%. It's more like Bantustans, right? They're separated by wall and by fences and by checkpoints and all kinds of things. So even the 22% has been separated Bantustan-like. So ultimately, the goal of Israel is all of Palestine. Hmm. If they could not have a single Palestinian left, this is what they're after. We hear them in their protests. We hear the Jews, not even the adults, the children, shouting out these slogans, a good Arab is a dead Arab. This is what they want. This is what they're after. They'd like to leave no one over there. For different reasons that maybe we can discuss a little bit later if we talk about the religious dimension of the conflict as well. So what I'm trying to say is this is the only language they understand. Do not underestimate the importance of this development. These types of things shock them, and will place fear in their hearts. In fact, Israeli analysts, even from the earlier wars, were talking about how Israelis are more and more now getting foreign passports. They're sick of it. They don't want to live there anymore. They don't want to live under that fear. So some of them eventually might say, forget Zionism and forget Israel. I'm going somewhere else. Under what law do they get to live their lives in complete peace and freedom, and celebrating in this music festival that we saw them celebrating,
nature,
while Palestinians on a daily basis are living a life of difficulty, of fear, of bombing, of crimes, which international law sanctions something like this? So this resistance really changes things for them in the way they see it. Yes, of course, they will retaliate in the way they're retaliating, in a most insane way, because to them, Arab and Muslim blood does not equal Israeli and Jewish blood, right? They're not equal.
Yesterday,
so, you know, if one Israeli dies, 100 of the Palestinians have to die, right?
Yeah, yesterday, actually, their minister of war, so he described the Gaza people being an animals.
Human animals.
Human animals.
Human
Even this
animals.
Does not apply. How come?
Well, this is not new, brother. This is the way they think. We have to understand. Unfortunately, these people, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu, you know, gives his speech to the whole world, telling the whole world that, you know, Hamas is a danger to civilization. The whole human civilization has to stand up to them. Are Arabs and Palestinians talking about Israelis this way, or is this the way the Israelis are talking about Arabs and Palestinians? So he just said human animals. That's very interesting, by the way, because we don't hear this that much anymore, because this is very important for the media, right? They try to hide such characterization so that they can continue to deceive people into thinking that Israel is some kind of dove working for peace. But this is the way they think. This is what brings out what is deep inside their psyche and in their hearts. So he called us human animals. A former Israeli army chief of staff, Rafael Itan, he said it very clearly. He said, when we have settled in all of the land, all the Arabs and Palestinians that are left, all they can do is to go around like drugged cockroaches. Notice the term, drugged cockroaches. This is how they view us. This is the civilized, the democratized Jews and Israelis. This is how they look at the Arabs and the Palestinians, right? So similarly, go back also when they first came and wanted to steal the land. What did they do? They said, we came and there was no one, right? Golda Meir said, we came and it was like there was nobody. There were no Palestinians. It's as if they didn't exist. Ben-Gurion said something similar, right? So, and that's why the slogan, a land without a people for a people without a land. So, from the very beginning, they convinced themselves, no, we didn't take anyone's land, there was no one here. The hundreds of thousands of Palestinians, oh, there was no one there. And you know, Ahmed, something interesting. This is actually remarkably similar to the position of the pilgrims that went to the United States back in 1621. So, those people they call the Pilgrim Fathers that migrated from Europe, running away from persecution to find new land. And they found it in America.
Yeah.
Those Pilgrim Fathers, you know what they said? Again, there were native people in the United States. So similarly, I think it was Cushman who said it, he said, there was nobody in the land we came to. It's like they all went away. These native Americans, Native Indians, they called them, all of a sudden disappeared. Subhanallah. Look how similar it is to their position
exactly.
here. But by the way, the parallels don't end there. the Pilgrim Fathers used to regard themselves as Neo-Israelites.
Hmm.
Meaning, it's almost as if they are now doing a similar migration to the migration of the Israelites, as if they are Israelites, these Pilgrim Fathers, okay, these Christians that are migrating to America. Similarly, the Israelis that performed the quote-unquote Aliyah, they call it the Aliyah, the migration to Israel, right, in the early 20th century, they used to call them also Pilgrim Fathers, as if, so you can see that relationship between those early pilgrims to America and the Israelis that migrated to steal Palestinian land.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm actually wondering, and before going to this point, I want to understand, so we've seen a lot of responses all across the world from countries, from even the people, some reactions in the media. So some of the people are supporting, some others are against the move. So how do you read the news?
Well, I mean, very typical, I would say, hypocrisy and political double standards, we saw many of the countries immediately siding with Israel and going as far as lighting their national monument and putting the Israeli flag on it in white and blue.
You refer to the normalization or this something else?
No. The response to the latest development was that many of these countries actually lit up their national monument. So the Empire State Building in New York, they put an Israeli flag, right? Because they're standing in support of the Israelis. France, the Eiffel Tower in Paris, also is big Israeli flag. 10 Downing Street in London, they put the Israeli flag. The Brandenburg Gate in Germany, big Israeli flag. The EU Commission, the EU Commission, which sometimes actually some of these EU countries do criticize Israel, big Israeli flag in support of Israel.
I was
remember
surprised.
All of this the next time they lecture us about human rights and democracy, right? So it's unbelievable that they continue to support the terrorist crimes of the Zionist.
What about Ukraine?
Ukraine, my God.
They were just in a war, right?
If you were asked, what would Zelensky's position be? You might think to yourself, well, he's suffering and bearing the brunt of a brutal Russian military occupation. Definitely he's gonna stand with the Palestinians because they are facing this brutal Zionist occupation. No, he stood with Israel. It does make sense to a certain extent because ultimately, his main support comes from the Western countries, okay, and comes from the US and possibly Israel as well. So he has no choice but to stand with Israel. But again, it is deeply hypocritical, especially since the situation is practically identical. This is a military occupation, and this is a worse and a much older military occupation, and then you go and you stand with the military occupation.
So I heard you talking about the West, US, even when you talked about the Europe and Ukraine, but I didn't notice anything about the Arab world.
Well, the Arab world, as usual, there were some official statements. The best of them would say something like the responsibility is on the Israelis, right? Because of the occupation, because of their crimes.
Which is correct.
Of course.
Yeah.
The worst of them would say something like, we just urge both to exercise restraint and go back to normal relations as if things were normal before. So we saw that as well. Of course, some of the countries that normalized relations, this is going to be their position. What else do you expect, right? But like we said, now I think the map of normalizing ties is going to look very different. I don't think those who have normalized are going to somehow, change the agreements that they had or something along those lines. But I think further normalization now has been hit hard. And like we said before, it revives the importance of the issue for the Muslim Ummah, that this is the mother of causes, of just causes for the Muslim Ummah that cannot be forgotten. Because this is what the enemies want. They want everything to be forgotten, right, so that they can continue their crimes. But this is the way that people now remember again, that there's a place called Palestine and our Palestinian brothers and sisters who are terrorized day in and day out.
So I understand this is happening nowadays because now the resistance is having some progression and they're making some victories, and then so, but knowing their capabilities, even the type of weapons that they're using, some basic equipments and so, and they could achieve some progress for sure. But the question now is where this is going to head.
Again, brother, we have to remember something important, which is the Israeli terrorists are propped up by the strongest nations in the world, and especially the US, right? And we from what some of the history that I was telling you about, we can see that there seems to be some historical symbiotic relationship in this way. But of course, not only the US, other countries as well, and it goes back to the time of the establishment of the state as well, and how all of those countries felt that placing Israel in the middle of the Middle East that way in order to represent and defend their own interests would be the best way to go. So we know that this is the case, unfortunately. Like we said, it's deeply hypocritical. But the point is that they have such incredible military capabilities, okay, because they are being propped up by these different countries. The US has given Israel trillions of US dollars in military aid to Israel since World War II. So there's a staggering difference in military capability between the two sides, that's for sure. But when you understand that well, you therefore can fathom the importance of the developments and the progress that the resistance has made in this operation. If they can do all this with fairly primitive weapons, a lot of which has been manufactured in Gaza, okay, blockaded Gaza itself, right? They're not getting trillions of dollars. They don't have the latest airplanes and rockets and iron domes and things of that nature. They're paragliding. I mean, you saw that they're paragliding in, right? They're using very light weapons. If that kind of military capability can inflict that kind of damage against practically a superpower in terms of military capability, then can you imagine if the Palestinians were properly supported by others, just like Israel is supported by others? It kind of reminds me also of the Syrian situation, okay? We, you know, for the longest time, we called the Syrian revolution an orphan revolution because nobody supported it. Okay, even though the Syrian people came out and did everything they could, and at times were close to bringing down the regime of that tyrant. But again, he's propped up by the others, by Iran, and eventually Russia entered in the end of 2015 militarily, so things went south, okay, for the Syrian people and for the Syrian resistance. But this is part of the problem. Who is supporting the Palestinians? who is allowing any support to go to them? If anything, you might be able to send humanitarian aid. Can you send military aid? Can you send them planes? This is just, you know, basic things. But again, it's important because it has a major effect, even a psychological effect, on the Israelis, the fear that it puts into their hearts. Even the some of the you know, the people in the military, the commanders, it's like, what happened? There's a regiment called the Gaza regiment. It's like it evaporated, you know.
The first one actually.
Yeah, just completely removed. So, what did all of your military capability do to you? And this is why analysts, even from before, military analysts, Israeli military analysts, they started saying, "I fear for Israel." Even before this one, even from 2014, they started saying, "I fear for Israel," because things are not going the way they are supposed to. And of course, the people are saying, you know, where is our government, right? Hmm.
Yeah, so speaking about the media, many messages, I mean, flood of messages, flood of news, flood of actions here and there, retweet, reshare. You know, so it's confusing, first of all. Secondly, well, how to deal with this kind of media, I mean, from an individual perspective? So as Muslims, how should we treat the media?
It's again, it's unfortunate, but it's just a reality that the media is completely biased towards the Zionists, despite all of their crimes. And the media is very important, brother. We have to concentrate on the issue of the media. Do not underestimate the importance of the media. In fact, in this time of social media, it is everything, honestly. It's a war in itself.
Yeah.
It's a battle in itself.
Revolution's game, right? Actually over.
You know, you can call them internet warriors, whatever you want, but the media is very important because public opinion is important,
sure.
Right? So Benjamin Netanyahu cannot call them human animals, you know. And I don't know, maybe he'll even hold his minister of war, you know, so-called defense minister, accountable. Why did you do that? Because what happens? It ruins their image, the image they're trying to portray of civilized people, of freedom-loving people. Oh, they just want a nation for the persecuted Jews, and so on and so forth. So things like this destroy their reputation. That's why you don't hear it as much, right? But if you go back to history, you know, you used to hear it all the time, you know, and they used to say it, and they're smiling and they're laughing, okay? Similarly in Syria, you know, in the beginning of the revolution, you know, and, you know, we have to see this because in the end, this is a sham, right? This is the issue of a sham, whether in Palestine or in Syria. In the beginning, you used to see a lot of these kinds of videos, torture videos, things that they're doing to the resistance. And then eventually, you stop seeing stuff like this. Does that mean it's not going on anymore?
No.
Of course it's going on. Mm. But they realize the importance of the image, portraying a certain image. They're fighting terrorists. They're not actually doing terrorism. This is what the Zionists want to do. We are fighting the terrorists. We are not terrorizing people. So they want to maintain this peaceful image, right? So the media is very important. Yes, some of what we as Muslims can do is to continue to expose the Israeli crimes.
Hmm.
Okay, the what the Zionists seek to achieve and what their grand plans and grand strategies are. This is very important. So do not underestimate this at all. These are battles and wars that are being fought. So immediately you look at the media, if you watch CNN or BBC or any of these other media outlets, it's like one eye is closed and the other eye is open. They're only seeing what, you know, quote unquote crimes are being committed by the resistance. They'll, you know, take a certain incident and they'll inflate it and escalate it and make it seem like it was something. It might have been a mistake. Mistakes happen. Okay, it might be an individual's mistake from one of the resistance, and it becomes everything. Oh, look at these terrorists and look at what they've done. They'll never do that with the Zionists, right? So in the face of such a discriminating and biased media, we have a very important role in continuing to expose the Zionists, their crimes, their continuous crimes. They don't stop, brother. They do not stop. You and I may have forgotten it because, oh, it wasn't in the media. The Palestinians are living this day in, day out. But Gaza has been blockaded for the last 18 years or so. The crimes will continue. The demolition under Al-Aqsa continues. We don't see it. It's not being covered in the media. So the continued effort to expose Zionist crimes, to expose them for what they are, to call a spade, call these terrorist crimes what they are, and they are terrorist crimes. Use the correct language. Okay, language is very important, by the way. And some people might think that it doesn't make much of a difference. It makes a huge difference. The Israelis, until now, what do they call their forces, brother?
You should defend.
Okay, IDP. In English, the Israeli IDP. Defense Forces, IDF.
IDF, yeah.
Israeli Defense Forces.
Yes.
He keeps saying it, you know, he says it 100 times in an interview, the Israeli Defense Forces. You think this does not affect people?
Defense.
Especially people who maybe do not follow this issue day in, day out. Maybe they watch something, you know, once every few months. The Israeli Defense Forces, starts to become entrenched in their minds. Oh, they are defending themselves, that's all, against these terrorist Palestinians. So when we come now and we show the truth of what is happening and we call them the Israeli terrorist forces, not the Israeli Defense Forces. And, you know, interesting anecdote concerning this. We had an activity for Palestine many years ago when Turkey sent the flotilla to Gaza in order to help lift the blockade, to send aid to the Gazans, if you remember that. And then the Israelis
stopped it, right?
So I think it was it was around that time or possibly just after that. So the moderator, actually, when he was giving his introduction, he was talking about, you know, what recently happened. Guess how he described the Israeli forces? He called them the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF. Believe it or not, he might have even spelled it out, the Israeli Defense Forces. This is an activity where we are exposing the crimes of Israel. He called them the Israeli Defense Forces. So immediately the first thing I said in my speech was, brother, the media has done an excellent job. And the first thing that came out of your mouth was Israeli Defense Forces. Call them the Israeli Terrorist Forces, the ITF, not the IDF, right? The language that they constantly use, defending, right, against the Palestinian terrorists. So we need to define things as they are. The Israeli terrorists, the Zionist crimes, okay? Not, the settlements and, you know, the peace negotiations and all of this stuff. They use this language, these euphemisms, in order to continue to deceive people.
So speaking about the roles, so at the end, what do you think the role of every Muslim nowadays? Every one of us can feel that his hands are tied, and what can I do? We don't have any connections, even the internet, the calls, the donations, all the things are...
Everything's watched, everything's being monitored. Yeah, people are even afraid to send humanitarian aid now.
Even the call,
It might be misconstrued.
Previously, they would say just call them, give them a call, support, like the moral support, psychological support. Nowadays, you cannot even call them in.
SubhanAllah. This is the crimes of the biased media, okay? Again, the media war. Of the media war, such that people feel that their hands are tied and they can't do anything, they can't speak up, and they have to just accept these crimes cower and completely succumb to the realities of this brutal military occupation. This is what the resistance does. It reinvigorates and re-encourages people to speak up. to say the word of truth, to speak truth to power, to resist these crimes in every way that they can. Hamas is resisting militarily. Others can practice resistance in other ways. Again, exposing their crimes in the media is so remarkably important in our age. Sending humanitarian aid, send it through, like official channels, right? So that they don't, you know, try to accuse you of this and that. Of course, accusing the innocents of sending simple humanitarian aid. There's quite a bit that we can do. Rather, we can continue to remind ourselves, our families, our communities, our ummah, that this is the mother cause, and that we will continue until, inshallah, we liberate Al-Masjid Al-Aqsa from this brutal military occupation. That this cannot, there's no end to this through, these negotiations where Israelis continue to just swallow up land. This is not the way you liberate the land. So, reminding ourselves and the ummah about also the religious nature and the civilizational nature of this crisis. Something that, again, there's a lot of deception about. A lot of people would like to portray it as a just a political problem, okay, has no religious dimension. It's just between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Why are you Arabs and why are you Muslims getting involved? It has nothing to do with you. This is the way they'd like to portray it. Concentrating on the importance of the religious dimension is another very important thing. This is part of creating awareness. When you say, what can we do? We create this awareness. Learn about the history of this problem. How did it get to where it got to? What is actually happening? Is there a religious dimension or not? Absolutely, there is a religious and civilizational dimension. But not only for Muslims. Of course, for Muslims, this is Al-Masjid Al-Aqsa. This is the third holiest site in Islam, as we know. We know that it is our job to protect our holy site. No, look at the religious dimension for the Jews themselves. This is what they'd like to conceal. Is it religious for them or is it just political? It is very much a religious issue. Why does Benjamin Netanyahu and so many prime ministers before keep talking about the Jewish state? Have you heard of a Muslim state, brother, in the world today? A Muslim state, the Muslim state. Have you heard of the Muslim state? They keep calling it the Jewish state. And then they claim it is merely a political issue. It is very much a religious issue because they look at it as the Jewish state. Okay, this is the national home for the Jews. By the way, when many of the European countries were working for a national home, they were looking for a national home for the Jews. And ultimately, it had to be in Palestine. Forget about the fact that they first talked about Uruguay and, I don't know, Argentina and other places. It was always Israel because of that religious dimension. They have to establish the Jewish state in Israel, right? Of course, some people will say, oh, but no, Zionism is only a political movement. No, it's not only a secular and a political movement. It is also a religious movement. Yes, some of the Zionists were secular and had a secular mindset, but a lot of them also were religious, and a lot of people who talked about repatriating the Jews in Israel are the Christian Zionists, and it is based on the biblical narrative. So it's deeply entrenched in this type of biblical ideology. Repatriating the Jews, bringing them back to their home, to Israel proper. So there's a deep religious dimension there as well. they talk about biblical Israel, right? They talk about expanding their borders. It's not just about Palestine. It's about biblical Israel. What is biblical Israel? Well, biblical Israel goes down south to the Sinai in part of Egypt, will go very far east into Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and even Iraq. Can you believe it? Of course, it will go north, right, to Syria, right? Of course, through Jordan and Syria, and it will even go west to Cyprus. They want biblical Israel. And in fact, I believe it was Ariel Sharon who actually sought to make biblical Israel official foreign policy, that this is what we are going after. They don't care. They'll just say it just like it is, right? So the idea is that this is what they're after. Even an objective Israeli historian like Israel Shahak, he says that you cannot understand what's happening without looking at the grand strategies that Israel is implementing. There are grand religious civilizational strategies that they're after. This is not just a political issue. So this awareness, building the awareness about the issue and what it's about and what's happening and why it's happening, right? And continuing to make dua and trying to help our Palestinian brothers and sisters in every way that we can. In every way that we can. Different people will have access to different things. Different people will be able to help in different ways. Some people will write. Some people will speak. Some people will be able to mobilize people, right? Mobilize aid. Anything that you can do. Because ultimately this touches us all. And actually I like what Benjamin Netanyahu said when he spoke to the whole world. And he said, because this is important for civilization, he says we have to destroy Hamas. For the sake of civilization, I say we have to stop these Israeli terrorists in their tracks for civilization and for the sake of all of humanity, not just Arabs and Muslims.
Okay. So at the end, thank you very much, Dr. Sheikh Mohammed Qutb. It's really insightful, talking about a lot of perspectives for the conflict, the religious part, the political map, and how things are going, the media, how to deal with the media, and most of all, our role towards this kind of conflict and how we're going to support our brothers in Palestine. Jazakallah khair, and thank you very much. Thank you.